In every group of sailors, there's at least one practical joker. We all know that guy or that girl who is just sneaking around and snickering and laying a trap for someone so that we can all get a good laugh at somebody's expense. And it's often great fun and great sport, but sometimes you have to admit it's a bit obnoxious, and it brings to mind that old saying, it's only funny until someone gets hurt. And then it's hilarious. You know, as sailors, we have to put up with it because life is hard enough and we can all use a good laugh once in a while. And that's what we get into today in our story, Rufus Armstrong. This is a long story. We'll have it in two parts. It's from Ocean Adventures, published in the 1850s by John Sherburne Sleeper. Ahoy, shipmates. Welcome back to the Sea Stories and Science Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Malcolm Torres, and today I've got a great story for you and a book review and a few announcements. Thanks for joining us. It's great to have you back. Today's story is Rufus Armstrong, or Practical Jokes. I've also got a book review for you on a book called The North Water, a novel published by Ian McGuire. Now, today's story, Rufus Armstrong, is quite comical. It's about an old sailor named Rufus Armstrong, and he's a real practical joker. But before we get into the story, I want to do a book review for you for a book that is not funny at all. This book is called The North Water. It's a novel by Ian McGuire. I really enjoyed this book. It's kind of a man's man book. It's really a very tough and hardened story about some sailors who are going aboard a ship called the Volunteer. It's a whaler. It's bound for the hunting waters of the Arctic Circle. It's leaving England, and it's going north. It's a sailing ship, and their mission is to whale, to kill whales and bring the blubber and the oil back to England. But there's an understory about insurance fraud, and it's an ill-fated voyage from the beginning. At the center of the story, there are two main characters. There's a man named Henry Drax, and he is raw, evil, tough, gnarly, salty sailor who is really brutal. He's a murderer. He's just about exploiting and taking advantage of those around him as much as he can. And he's just a horrible human being. But in the novel, he's kind of fascinating to read about because the book is written so well. The other main character is a man named Patrick Sumner. He's an ex-army surgeon who is suffering from a really bad case of post-traumatic stress disorder because he was in India at the siege of Delhi. And he underwent some really harrowing situations, and he did some things that were really dishonorable because of the horrible situation that he was in, with Delhi being under siege and him having to perform surgeries and try to care for so many wounded people. So he is disgraced and looking for a way out. His name is known across society as a kind of a coward and a traitor, and he is looking for a way out. So he signs on as the surgeon aboard this whaler. And him being kind of like this washed up, he's got an addiction to opium, and he's got horrible PTSD, but he's a little bit kind of likable. And then this bad guy, Henry Drax, aboard the ship, they ship out from London, and they head north into the Arctic. And it's just this, like, brutal story. I mean, you can just feel the wood of the ship and the cold of the water and the dark, starry night and the icebergs and the ice floes and the polar bears. And it just gets dark and terrible, the plot. There's some connections between like the kind of plot line that you might see in a book by Cormac McCarthy. Just really brutally tough characters in these harsh situations. Also like Herman Melville, maybe like Moby Dick a little bit, but not like this expansive literary sort of experience. Very, very straight down the bones type of writing. Not very sentimental or in-depth into the moods and the feelings of the characters. Very much like surface level tough situations that they're in, but also getting to know these two main characters. And then you know there's a conflict coming between them. No spoilers. I highly recommend this book. I thought it was really good. It's called The North Water, a novel by Ian McGuire. So now, before we get into today's story, Rufus Armstrong, or The Practical Jokes, I just want to ask folks out there, please do me a couple small favors. One is to post a review on the podcast. We're up to several hundred people listening to the podcast each day, which is awesome. It's kind of fun and exciting to see that. And it's nice to see that folks are coming back and enjoying the episodes. I would ask, though, that you post a review on the podcast. You don't have to write some analysis or literary, you know, critique. You can just state that you like it and why you like it. So thank you for that. The other thing that I would ask you to do is to go to Amazon or iBooks and grab a free ebook on there. You can read it on your phone or you can read it on your computer. Grab that. It's called The Pirate. It's by me, Malcolm Torres. It's free. It won't take you but 45 minutes to read it. The Pirate is part one of a short novel. The whole thing's only 120 pages, but it's just part one of it. The other two parts are there for sale, a couple bucks each. I would greatly appreciate that, folks. Thank you so much. So now we'll just have a quick word from our sponsor and we'll get into today's story. Today's story, as I mentioned, is from Ocean Adventures, a great old book of salty sea stories published in the 1850s in Boston by an author named John Sherburne Sleeper. And today's story is called Rufus Armstrong, or Practical Jokes. Rufus Armstrong was a true-hearted Yankee sailor. He was endowed with a noble spirit and an unusual share of intrepidity. Neither storm nor battles could awaken a feeling in his bosom akin to fear, or hardly cause him to look grave. He was a whole-hearted, jovial fellow of a generous disposition, always ready to assist a friend or even to share his purse with a stranger. But Rufus was an exuberant flow of spirits, was fond of distraction, of a frolic, but above all things he loved a practical joke. He laughed often himself and delighted to make others laugh, and cared little at whose expense they laughed. And he had a peculiar facility in eliciting mirth from men and things, which to other persons would have presented a very sedate aspect. His practical jokes did not originate in a spirit of mischief, but in love of fun, for Rufus cherished no malice in his bosom towards any human being. His propensity to joke was irresistible, and when a good opportunity occurred to perpetuate a practical joke, he would not spare his best friend he had in the world. This trait in his character will best be seen by a few illustrations. On board the Orestes, Rufus had a shipmate by the name of Tim Tibbets. Tim was one of those selfish mortals who keep a sharp lookout for number one, a character which Rufus despised, for, with that improvidence which is characteristic of a sailor, he seldom thought of the morrow. One evening he saw Tim slyly appropriating to his own use a pot of tea which did not rightly belong to him. He took it into the forecastle and stowed it away safe, as he thought, intending it as a solace and comforter in the middle watch. Rufus twigged him and determined to have some sport. In the first watch, after the watch below were asleep, he went down into the forecastle and quietly got possession of Tim's pot of tea. He drank it off and then filled the pot with salt water. Tim began to grow sleepy about three bells, and it was his lookout. He thought of his pot of tea, which he had so slyly stowed away, and his mouth watered at the thought, for he loved tea with a deep-seated affection. He slipped quietly down into the forecastle, groped about, and seized his pot, which was snugly deposited in a nook on the breast hook. He put the vessel to his lips and took a good swallow. But such a display of coughing and sputtering and stuttering and muttering, succeeded by menaces and abuse, ensued as, I will venture to say, has not often been witnessed, even in the forecastle of a merchant ship. It roused everybody in the forecastle, and Rufus declared the fellow ought to be hustled for coming below and disturbing the watch when they were quietly snoozing in their berths as if for a wager. It even disturbed the slumbers of the watch on deck, who were quietly caulking, and of a second mate who was taking a nap, mounted in the harness cask and leaning against the fife rail. Tim was in an awful rage. He declared it would be the death of the scoundrel who put the scurvy trick upon him. He strongly suspected Rufus and kept a sharp lookout for him afterwards. Mr. Wilder, the second mate, was an inactive, sleepy-headed fellow and was much too apt to get asleep in his watch on deck, when the safety of the ship might depend on his vigilance. One pleasant night during the first watch, about 6 bells, Mr. Wilder mounted his perch, the harness cask, near the mainmast, and was soon fast asleep and snoring like a pig. Just about this time the wind hauled ahead a couple of points, and Rufus Armstrong, who was steering his trick at the wheel, took it into his head that he would have some sport, and at the same time cure his officer of sleeping at his post. He left the wheel for a moment, took the mizzen staysail downhaul, spencers were not a fashion in those days, and passed the bight of rope gently around the neck of the officer, and belayed it to a cleat on the mainmast. He then softly stepped aft to the wheel and stamped violently on the deck. The captain was below, turned in, and hearing the noise, he thought something extraordinary was about to happen, and hastened on deck, in a scanty and not very fashionable costume, and as he put his head out of the companionway, Rufus bawled out in his hoarse voice, "Mr. Wilder! Mr. Wilder! I tell you again that the wind is hauling ahead. The ship won't lie her course." "What's the matter?" exclaimed the captain in a voice of thunder, though tremulous with fear. "Nothing, sir," answered the mate at a venture. "Hello there, forward! Come aft and brace up the yards." At the same time he sprang from the harness cask and was brought up all standing by the neck. "Murder!" shouted the poor man on discovering his condition, and he struggled hard to get free, which drew the round turn still closer and was near converting the farce into a tragedy. The poor fellow groaned and kicked convulsively and uttered a gasping, choking kind of noise. Rufus again left the wheel and sprang toward him, apparently urged by sympathy and curiosity, and assisted the captain to discover the true state of things. I declare now, with Rufus, with well-counterfeited surprise, Mr. Wilder has lashed himself to the fife rail for fear of getting asleep and tumbling over the harness cask, and when he awoke he forgot all about it, and the rope has got around his neck. I thought he was asleep, as I called him twice, and he made no answer. By this time the poor mate was relieved from his rough and close-fitting necklace, and as soon as he recovered from his fit of strangulation, the captain gave him a tremendous rating for jeopardizing the lives of all on board by sleeping in his watch. And as to his denial that he tied himself, the captain treated it as moonshine, and for his comfort told him that, even if he spoke the truth, it would only make matters worse instead of better. For what kind of an officer must that man be whom the crew could fasten to the fife rail without his knowledge? But the trick he served Jerry Johnson was rather a severe one. Jerry was particularly fond of being comfortable at all times, and had a great antipathy to a ducking, to guard against which he supplied himself with substantial and waterproof clothing, comforters, etc., to wear around his neck, and a broad-rimmed tarpaulin hat to use in bad weather, in which he secured by a lanyard to the buttonhole of his pea jacket, in consequence of his taking so much pains in his rigging. It took him a great while to come back on deck in bad weather, and he was severely scolded several times by the mate, and grumbled at by all hands, but without much effect. At length we got on the coast. It was late in the fall, and the weather was cheerless and rainy, and Jerry was longer than ever in turning out, coming on deck and relieving the helm. There was a good deal of muttering about it in the other watch, and Rufus thought he was fair game for a practical joke. Accordingly, one cold and stormy night when Jerry was asleep in his berth, Rufus softly descended into the forecastle and took away Jerry's hat, which was carefully deposited near the head of his bed. He poured into it a couple of quarts of water from alongside and carried it back to the same place. The watch was afterwards called in due time, and it was Jerry's next trick at the wheel. He turned out and decked himself as comfortably as possible, and took particular care to fortify his neck against any exposure to rain. Before he finished his toilet, however, Mr. Manley, the chief mate, came forward and putting his head down the scuttle, bawled out, "Hello, you Jerry, are you going to relieve the wheel, or do you want me to lend a hand to find your traps?" Jerry was by this time all ready, and with unusual alacrity, put his hand to the head of his berth and seized his hat. In his hurry, he did not discover that it was heavier than usual, but hastily clapped it upon his head, and much to his astonishment and dismay, found himself subjected to all the comforts of a cold water shower bath gratis. The effort was truly electrifying, and as soon as the first shock was over, while the cold water was forcing various passages beneath his neckerchief and comforter, after well saturating those articles of clothing, he uttered a shriek which could be heard a mile. At the same time, Rufus thrust his snub nose into the forecastle and exclaimed, "Jerry, you had better come on deck if you don't want to get yourself into trouble, for Mr. Manley says that if you don't relieve the wheel in less than a minute, he'll give you a touch of the rope's end, and you know he's a man of his word." This was truly an unfortunate state of things. Although Jerry had a great antipathy to being wet, he had a greater aversion to the rope's end, and, all accoutred as he was, with wet inner garments and shivering with the cold, he clawed upon deck and proceeded aft to take the helm. He told a pitiful tale to the mate about some person filling his hat with water as an excuse for his tardiness, but the mate was a poor hand at consolation, at least in this case, and he told Jerry that it served him right and refused to allow him to be relieved to change his clothes until his 2 hours had expired. The joke which he put upon the supercargo of the Restes should not be forgotten. He was an arrogant young man and a great fop withal, and held to the maxim that clothes make the man. One day, while the ship was lying in the inner roads of Buenos Aires, the supercargo came on board for some purpose which I have forgotten. He was dressed for a dinner party and looked as nice as if he had just stepped out of a lady's perfume bandbox. With his ruffled shirt, his spotless collar, his white neckerchief, his new dress coat of invisible green, his silk stockings and his white gloves, he stayed longer than he intended and was in a hurry to get ashore in order to fulfill his engagement. The boat was manned and Rufus pulled the after oar. The boat grounded at about half a cable's length from the land, and what was worse, no cart was at that time on the beach, which kind of vehicle was ordinarily used for the purpose of taking ashore those passengers in boats who were not in the plight to wade, which was a difficulty. What was to be done? If he waited 15 minutes for the cart, he should be late, but Rufus Armstrong, like a good genius, came to his assistance. "Mr. Popinjay," said Rufus, with a serious and respectful air, "you had better get on my back and I'll carry you safe ashore high and dry in the twinkling of a capstan bar." "Do you think you could do it, Rufus? Do you really think I might trust you?" "Trust me? Why, sir, I've carried men ashore from the boat of twice your height. Do it indeed." "Well, Rufus, I know you are strong and powerful, and I suppose there is not the least danger, but I would not meet with an accident now for $500. Mr. Popinjay, without more ado, mounted Rufus's back, and the sly rogue marched off firmly with him towards the shore. The dandy was grinning at his good fortune in securing such a conveyance when Rufus's right foot plunged apparently into a deep mud hole. He strove to recover himself, but in vain, made a few false steps, and finished the matter by falling backwards at full length, flat upon Mr. Popinjay, in a place where the depth of the water was about a foot. Poor Mr. Popinjay! He was soaked from top to toe, his clothes were spoiled, and he was cut off from all hopes of dining abroad on that day. Rufus was profuse in his apologies, and made many lamentations for the unfortunate occurrence, but there was a lurking look of roguery in his eye all the time. Mr. Popinjay absolutely shed tears of vexation, and even afterwards looked upon Rufus Armstrong as a dangerous man, notwithstanding his everlasting fund of good humor. My humorous friend, Rufus Armstrong, once played a serious joke on a poor Chinaman in Batavia, and, if he had been taken at that time, his life would doubtless have been sacrificed. With 3 others of a crew and the second mate, he went ashore one day in the boat for the purposes of conveying to the mercantile house, far up the canal, some bags of dollars. The boat was detained ashore some time, and Rufus, with one of his shipmates, obtained permission to stroll about town. In the course of their rambles, they heard a terrible uproar in another street. They hastened to the scene of operations and found themselves in the midst of numerous and exceedingly noisy mob, occasioned by a quarrel between some Malay and a party of Chinese sailors. The inhabitants of that quarter of the city had turned out to a man, and a motley collection they made consists of Malays, Chinese, Dutch, and a few English and Americans, chiefly seamen. They were abusing each other in a fine style and skating their fists in each other's faces, evidently ripe for a fight. Rufus was delighted, and from the mere love of fun unceremoniously sprang into the midst of the assembly and soon checked the oratorical display of a bawling Chinaman by giving him a severe blow on the mouth. He then tackled a Malay and upset him in a hurry. His laudable example was followed by the rest of the mob, and a general and desperate combat ensued. Rufus, having accomplished his object, withdrew from the melee and stood aloof, watching with much interest the results of the engagement. His attention was soon particularly directed to a tall, good-looking, and well-dressed Chinaman with a splendid queue braid reaching to the ground, who, notwithstanding he was in the midst of a dense mob, made himself conspicuous by his loud and constant outcries and furious gestures. Rufus conceived a wicked project, which he hastened to execute. He again mingled in the throng and soon elbowed his way to the spot where the long-queued celestial was dealing out at the top of his voice, the meaning of which was either below or above the comprehension of Rufus. By dint of hard pushing and a great exertion of strength, Rufus got close behind him, drew his jackknife from his pocket, which by good luck had been sharpened that morning, and cut like a razor, seized the Chinaman's long braid with his left hand, and with his right, grasping the knife, cut it off close to his head, before the legitimate owner knew what he was about. The poor fellow, who felt his hair pulled rather unceremoniously, turned round as soon as he conveniently could to see what was the difficulty, but Rufus had cleared out, carrying with him the long braid as a trophy. The tall Chinaman put his hand to the back of his neck, and when he found that his braid had really disappeared, he uttered a yell of grief and indignation, which might have been heard a mile away. He caught a glimpse of Rufus as he was forcing his way out of the mob, and suspected that he was the scoundrel who had deprived him of his most valued ornamental appendage. As soon as he could extricate himself from the throng, he prepared with a party of his countrymen, who were much shocked and scandalized at the insult, to follow after the Yankee sailor and teach him better manners in future than to cut off a Chinaman's long braid. But fortunately for Rufus, he had a start, and with his shipmates reached the boat, which he found only awaiting their return to shove off. They seized the oars and got the boat under rapid motion, just as the Chinaman, breathing fury and vengeance, led by the braidless orator, appeared turning the corner of a street, not 100 rods off, and the robbed and insulted man gave a wild howl of despair as he beheld Rufus, with a grin of exultation, giving way as if for dear life, with the gaudily ribboned braid tastefully arranged around his neck after the manner of the boas of our fashionable belles. Rufus Armstrong got safe home to Boston with his prize, and when he was paid off, he procured a stylish scratch with lovelocks of an auburn color and got the unfortunate Chinaman's braid nearly spliced to the after part of it, and he took great delight in walking about with his dandy locks and his long braid decked with ribbons reaching to his heels, an object of curiosity, admiration, or envy to all he met. And that brings us to the end of part one of this story, Rufus Armstrong. As we can see, he's a great practical joker. And in the next story, I'm sure we're going to find out some even bigger and more humorous and possibly dangerous practical jokes that Rufus gets himself involved in. So until our next episode, shipmates, be sure to subscribe and post a review on the podcast. And please, my special request, go to Amazon or iBooks and grab that free short story, The Pirate by Malcolm Torres, and post a review on that, greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. And we'll be coming back to you with the second half of this story, Rufus Armstrong, in just a few more days.